Ever find yourself like in family law going over a hypothetical and you just think, wait a minute, where does biology end and where does the law begin?
Right.
It's a tricky thing.
Oh, yeah.
And well, that's exactly the kind of legal knot we're going to try to untangle today as we take this deep dive into a landmark Supreme Court case. You ready for this one? It's Michael H.V. Gerald D. back in 1989.
Oh, this is a good one. This
Okay.
case, I mean, if you're listening and you're going to be a lawyer, especially if you're even like remotely interested in family law or constitutional law,
Yeah.
you're going to want to know this one.
Yeah.
It throws you right into some pretty fundamental issues. We're talking about parental rights. Like, what does that even mean? What is due process when it comes to families?
Yeah.
And then also the role of tradition. You know, how much does history actually matter when we're trying to understand, like, our Constitution today?
Yeah, are we bound by the past or not?
Exactly.
And I think what makes this case even more fascinating are the facts
Oh,
themselves.
for sure.
They're really compelling. So picture this, right? A biological father fighting for recognition of his child. Her name's Victoria.
Right.
But here's the thing. The mother is married to another man. So you've got this like undeniable biological link. Butting heads with, the legal framework of marriage. And it really makes you stop and think, like, what are our priorities as a society? What matters more here?
Well, and that's what the court had to figure out, right?
Yeah.
And to really get into the weeds of this, you've got a pretty robust set of materials to work with.
Oh, yeah. We've got excerpts from pasted text. We've got a nice case brief to kind of break things down. And then, of course, a good old-fashioned legal brief that that lays out all the nitty-gritty arguments in Michael H.
All the ins and outs, yeah.
Exactly. And our mission for you listening today is, we want to go beyond just like knowing who won or lost.
Right.
Like we want to get into the minds of both sides.
Yeah.
Understand their arguments, figure out what was behind that Supreme Court decision, and then ultimately, what does this whole thing still tell us about family law and the Constitution today, years later? So let's dive in, shall we?
Okay, so first things first. Victoria is born in 1981. Her mom, Carol, is married to a guy named Gerald D.
Okay.
But later on, DNA testing shows, and get this, there's over a 98% probability that another man, Michael H., who Carol had a relationship with, is actually Victoria's biological dad,
Wow.
right? Pretty high probability.
Yeah.
But here's where things get really interesting.
Okay.
This biological reality kind of slams right into existing California law at the time. They have this thing called Evidence Code Section 621,
Right.
and it's a conclusive presumption of paternity.
Big word.
Big word.
Yeah.
Basically, what it boils down to is if a child is born to a married woman and she's living with her husband, the law automatically says that husband, he's the dad. End of story.
Yeah. And here's the kicker. Under this law, only the husband or the wife can challenge that presumption. And they've only got a limited time to do it.
That's a pretty narrow window.
Yeah. It kind of makes you think, like, hold on a second. So even if you've got like really strong biological evidence, California law is basically shutting the door on Michael's claim right from the get-go.
Right.
It almost seems like counterintuitive. I mean, isn't biology usually like the main thing when you're trying to figure out who the parents are?
Well, and that's exactly what the case is all about.
Yeah.
It's this clash between what biology tells us and what the law says.
Yeah.
And in this particular situation, the law was specifically designed to put a premium on the stability and the integrity of the family unit that already exists.
Okay.
Like, they wanted to create this kind of legal shield around these families, saying, look, we're not going to let every outside claim come in and potentially disrupt things. So you've got this really clear distinction that the law is making between, like, biological parenthood, which is the scientific truth, right?
Yeah.
Versus legal parenthood, who the law says is the parent.
Okay, that makes sense. So I get wanting to protect families that's already there, to keep them together.
Right.
So what happens next? Does Michael just like give up?
No,
No.
not at all. He takes legal action, all right?
Yeah.
He wants to be recognized as Victoria's father. He wants visitation rights, but the California courts, they don't side with him.
Okay.
So ultimately, this case makes its way all the way up to the Supreme Court.
Wow.
Yeah, big leagues now.
Yeah. So what are the big legal questions the justices have to figure out here?
Well, it all comes down to the 14th Amendment, specifically the Due Process Clause. So the first big question is, did California's law, this conclusive presumption thing, did it actually violate Michael's rights? Like, did it unfairly prevent him from even trying to prove he was the dad just because he wasn't the husband? And the second thing they had to consider was, did Victoria have a right to know her biological father and have a relationship with him? And did this California law, you know, mess with that potential right?
So what did the Supreme Court do? Which way did they go?
In a 5-4 decision, they ended up siding with California.
Okay.
They upheld the state's law, saying that it was constitutional. Basically, they concluded that, at least in this specific situation, Michael didn't have a constitutionally protected right that would override the state's really strong preference for protecting the existing marital family.
Yeah. Now, the court had already said before, you know, that parents have a liberty interest in being with their kids. We saw that in Stanley v. Illinois.
Right.
So how did they square that with what they decided in Michael H.?
That's a really important distinction to make. You're totally right. Stanley was all about unmarried fathers. And that's a key difference here. In Michael H., you've got a marriage between Carol and Gerald.
Yeah.
So the court's looking at this not just as a dad versus a child, but a dad's claim versus an already existing marital family, which the state has a big, big interest in protecting.
Got it. So the marriage context was kind of the tiebreaker here.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, so let's break down the majority's logic. Why did they side with California?
Okay, so the main opinion, it was written by Justice Scalia and joined by a few others, Rehnquist, O'Connor, and Kennedy.
Okay.
And they really hung their hat in a specific way of understanding the Due Process Clause.
Okay.
Scalia's argument was that the Due Process Clause protects rights that are, and this is a quote, deeply rooted in the nation's history and tradition.
Okay.
And according to his research, his historical analysis, there just wasn't a strong tradition of protecting the rights of, like, a biological father who's had an affair to assert paternity when the mother's married to someone else.
So they're basically saying, look, because this specific situation isn't something that's historically been protected legally, the Constitution doesn't force us to protect it now.
You got it.
Okay. Scalia argued that California's law was a legitimate way for the state to say, we're promoting family integrity. They saw the conclusive presumption as, like, a way to stop these potentially messy legal battles from popping up and disrupting families that were already established.
Okay, so very much focused on keeping things, like, stable.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
But obviously not everyone agreed. What about the dissent?
Oh, yeah.
How do they feel about all this?
They were not happy with the majority's reasoning at all. We're talking Justices Brennan, White, Marshall, and Blackmun.
Strong dissent.
Yeah. Brennan, in particular, he argued that this rigid reliance on history, like, it basically freezes our rights in time.
It prevents the Constitution from changing and adapting as society, you know, grows and develops its understanding of what family means.
Right.
He felt like the court should focus more on the actual relationship between the parent and child.
Yeah.
The actual bonds and the realities of, like, how families really look today, not just in the past.
Yeah.
And Justice White, he specifically zeroed in on the fact that Michael had an actual relationship with Victoria. Like, they had lived together. They had built something real.
Yeah.
And he said that should have been enough to trigger those due process protections.
It seems like a very fundamental disagreement on, like, how to read the Constitution.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, are we stuck in the past, or do we try to look at it through the lens of, like, modern values?
Right. And even among the justices who agreed with the outcome, there were some pretty interesting differences in how they got there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, Justice O'Connor, she agreed with the ultimate decision, but she wrote her own separate opinion because she wasn't fully on board with Scalia's super strict historical test. She was worried that this rigid approach could make it really hard to recognize new fundamental rights in the future.
Okay.
And then you've got Justice Stevens. He also concurred, but he really focused on the idea that, you know, Michael did have a fair chance to make his case under California law, although, you know, the facts of the case, they paint a different picture.
They might disagree on that point.
Okay, yeah.
So when we zoom out and look at Michael H., what are, like, the big takeaways?
The most important legal idea that comes out of this case is this deeply rooted in history and tradition test.
Okay.
It's how the court decides whether something is a fundamental right worthy of protection under the Due Process Clause.
Okay.
And this idea, it's become super influential in all kinds of constitutional cases since then.
I see.
But it's also important to remember the dissenting opinions. They made a strong case for a more flexible interpretation of the Constitution, one that recognizes that society changes and our understanding of family changes with it.
So again, we're back to this debate about the role of history versus the need for the Constitution to evolve.
Exactly. And for family law specifically, Michael H. shows us that, at least back in 89, the court was okay with states putting the stability of married families first.
Okay.
Even if that meant, you know, pushing aside the rights of a biological parent who wasn't part of that married couple. It really highlights how important the law sees marriage as an institution.
It's interesting, too, how much disagreement there was, even among the justices themselves.
Oh, yeah, it wasn't a slam dunk decision by any means. And even within the conservative justices, you see some differences. Like O'Connor, she wasn't totally comfortable with Scalia's strict historical approach. Her worries about the implications of what he said in footnote 6, they still get talked about by legal scholars today.
That's fascinating. And when you look at the dissent, especially Brennan's arguments about, you know, how society changes and how important those actual real life relationships are, it's hard not to see the seeds of later legal challenges that changed how we think about family, like in the context of same-sex marriage.
Yeah, you can definitely draw a line from those arguments to later cases like Obergefell v. Hodges, you know, the one that legalized same-sex marriage across the country.
Huge case.
Huge. But on the flip side, this idea of relying on history and tradition, it's also popped up again recently, too. Like in Dobbs, the case that overturned Roe v. Wade.
So it's clear that the issues raised in Michael H., they haven't gone away.
Not at all. They're still very much alive in the legal world today.
So to sum it all up, in Michael H. v. Gerald D., the Supreme Court upheld California's law. They said the biological father didn't have a right that was, quote, deeply rooted in history and tradition, and that the state was right to protect the married family. But it was a close call. The dissent made really strong arguments about the parent-child relationship and how the Constitution needs to keep up with the times.
That's a great summary. You hit all the key points.
So to you listening, think about it. The court's focus on tradition versus those powerful arguments from the dissent. Where do you think the line should be when we're talking about parental rights in the 21st century?
Right.
Is the Constitution trapped in the past, or should it grow and change along with our ideas about family and society?
It's a big question, and it's one that's still being debated today.
Absolutely. And this deep dive into Michael H. really shows that even these, like, seemingly settled legal issues can still spark debate and continue to shake the legal landscape. So keep exploring these complex questions. They're the heart of what legal reasoning is all about.
Couldn't agree more.